I would like now to invite His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj, His Grace Purujan Prabhu, and Her Grace Jagatarini Mataji to join us for the question answer session. Thank you to all the devotees who have sent their questions. So we gathered plenty of them. And so today, all three of them will attend to as many as possible. And as I've announced before, the remaining questions that have been submitted early enough will be dealt with after the retreat.
This is
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. I want to greet, first of all, Burijan Prabhu affectionately to this session. Soon we will be joined by Jagatarini Mataji, and we will try to answer your questions, as Prashanta explained, the questions which you sent into the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, the umbrella of this Govardhan Online Retreat, the umbrella organization, has been sorted out. Those who were for Burijan are in Burijan's bowl. Those who are for me are in my bowl. And we will pick from these bowls randomly your questions. Hare Krishna, Jagatarini Mataji, welcome. We are seeing you with great happiness. I suggest that the oldest and wisest amongst us will start. Maybe Burijan Prabhu, you pick a question and then you answer it.
I would have suggested that you would begin.
Okay, so I will. Here is the first question. It is from Siddhartha in New York. What is the remedy for a devotee? I think someone of you is not yet unmuted who needs to unmute, so therefore there's an echo. What is the remedy for a devotee who eagerly wants mercy that in truth they are not qualified for, but they think they have the qualification? Put in another way, how do we deal with feelings of entitlement towards spiritual life? My understanding so far is that entitlement is a lack of humility and false eagerness, and the only solution to properly engage in hearing and chanting, and the only solution is to properly engage in hearing and chanting. Could you please shed more light on this? This is from Siddhartha in New York. So it deals with the question entitlement. Seems to not be the right mood, but a mood of humility and eagerness is. This question comes from the background that we see Srila Rupa Goswami expressing his lack of qualifications in these prayers. He says, I'm wretched, I'm low-born, I cannot constantly think of you, my Lord, yet still I request you to give me something which not even Brahma and Shiva and the devotees who perform great sadhana have. So one might conclude that Rupa Goswami presents here an unsolvable problem. He is so disqualified, yet he feels he can ask for something which requires high qualifications. And Siddhartha now thinks this looks like a mood of entitlement, that he feels entitled, maybe just because I'm your devotee, it's my right that you give me these realizations. But Srila Rupa Goswami is not coming from this place. His place is that he is facing the lowliness of what he thinks is lacking in him. He faces what he thinks are his disqualifications. But then he says, helplessly, I'm drawn to you because you are so attractive and so sweet, so madhurya, that I just cannot help myself. I wish to help, to have you. And here, my dear devotees, is the interesting psychology of Krishna consciousness there. On the one hand, the devotee feels greatly humbled by his own disqualifications. On the one hand, the devotee really feels incompetent and incapable. Yet, because he has heard so much about Krishna and his qualities of unlimited mercy, he has heard so much about his nature that he feels so much eager to have the highest, to have these realizations. My dear devotees, don't think he feels entitled to have them. No, he thinks I should not get these realizations. It's impossible. But still, what can I do? I have heard so much about you that I just cannot be hopeless. It's a very interesting psychological state, and really it will come up in us as our heart gets purified. In the purified heart, these two paradoxes are very easily possible. Great humility, readiness to face the lowliness of one's fallen condition, but then not sinking into depression, but wanting to somehow or other Krishna's mercy. And the only, let us say, hope is for such a devotee that he has heard that Krishna is most merciful to the fallen. This doesn't make him feel I'm entitled, should get it, it's my good right. No. He feels more in the that I'm hoping against hope that you will see something in me, maybe just that I'm so fallen, and this will move your heart that you show me your mercy. Thank you for this wonderful question. And if this is not yet 100% clear, Siddhartha, we are sometimes in contact with each other on the telephone. We can then speak more about it. Hare Krishna. Now, I think Burijam Prabhu should choose one of the questions from his begging bowl.
Just to prove that it's a random choice, look that way. And I'm the one begging that it's a simple one, because I've read all the questions in advance, and some of them are very, very difficult to answer, especially to devotees that you don't know well. I don't know well, and often devotees have something very specific in their mind, and they ask it in the question in a general way. But I will try my best. And also, you'll have to forgive me. I'm going to try my best to be brief because there are quite a few questions. At present, this is from a very saintly devotee, Shanta Vigrahadas. At present, I'm caring for my father in his last days, like cleaning, bathing, feeding, etc. Oftentimes, he's very uncooperative with me, and it becomes difficult to care for him. So this is, we can see we're heading for a question is of how do we apply the sterling example that Sanatana Goswami gave and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to our life. I get short-tempered when he is in his moods, and sometimes I am very bad. I have my limitations. But Mahaprabhu showed no disgust in touching Sanatana Goswami when he was covered with the sores and there was an overflow of his own prema. How can I apply this interaction between Sanatana and Mahaprabhu in my father's case? So a very humbled saint has asked this question, and I shall try my best to answer it very briefly. That there are several principles at work. One is when we compare ourselves to Sanatana Goswami and his example and to Mahaprabhu and his example, we're naturally going to come up very short. And we can feel very bad about ourselves. We can feel very terrible about ourselves. We can feel very depressed about ourselves. But that is not humility. Humility is when we see our limitation. And that should be continuously in life present before us, seeing our limitation, how we don't come up to the standard of how we wish to act. Although I desire good, I act bad. So we become humble, not depressed. And humility means, oh, Krishna, unless you're merciful to me, turn to Krishna. Unless you're merciful to me, what hope do I have? I'm so controlled by the forces of material nature. And the second point is what happens when I become bad-tempered and when I don't live up to my expectations and I get angry. Please know that it is very typical for a carer to get into that position, especially when trying one's best to care from a person who has helped us in our life, like our father. The last thing we want to do is be like that, but it's completely natural. So very often carers need someone caring for them while they're caring for the person that they're caring for. They need counseling. They need help to make sure that to not take those bad moments seriously, know that trying the best, they're in a very difficult circumstance. And every time we fall down from the ideal, we get up as quickly as we can. And it sounds to me that because you're conscious of your situation, you get up, you're very mature and named properly saintly devotee. So try your best. And that's probably how I'm going to answer most of the questions. Try your best. Now we can't hear.
Hare Krishna Jagatarini, would you please be so kind to pick the next question and then answer it?
On this side, we're not able to hear anything.
Oh. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Yes. Please, Jagatarini. Yes. Pick the pick a question from your begging bowl, and then
can you hear?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
There's a bit of an echo, I think.
Yes, because we have to switch ourselves off. Yes, please take a question.
This is the question. Is Vrindavan a dangerous place? Is material world a dangerous place? How to take? I am confused. Please explain. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Rama Krishna, C. So, well, I'll also try to answer briefly, but I was reflecting on this morning. Is Vrindavan a dangerous place? Isn't it that the material world is a dangerous place? And the answer, of course, is that the material world is a dangerous place. So why do we say that Vrindavan is a dangerous place? One of the reasons we say that is because Vrindavan is an extraordinarily beautiful place. However, it's not meant to be enjoyed by us. It's not created for our direct pleasure, meaning that, oh, this is mine now. Once I saw a short video about a wealthy man who invited two people who were living on the street to come and live in his house. And as soon as they moved into his house, they were still them, and he was still him. And immediately, because they were only humans, many complications came about. And he was admitting to himself that it was complicated having them living with him. They were taking up his space. Now, Krishna's not like that wealthy man who says, they're taking up my space. That's not the analogy that's being drawn. But the analogy comes in that we have to first become actually capable of being in Vrindavan with the right mindset and mentality before we can be in Vrindavan and not feel some danger, actually some caution in being there. So is Vrindavan a dangerous place? No, Vrindavan is Krishna's home. Are we a little bit dangerous while we're thinking that everything belongs to us, like misbehaved children? I think so.
Thank you very much, Jagatarini. That was a wonderful explanation, really. Very thought-provoking, yes. When the wrong people come to Vrindavan, then they will hit their limitations even in Vrindavan, and they will be required to change. Good. The next question here, I need to do this. How do we completely and entirely convince ourselves that it is only divine aspirations that will satisfy our being? Philosophical clarity is there. Life experiences are there to back it up. But 100% conviction and surety is not. And we still sometimes aspire for temporary things. This question is raised by Pratik Agarwal from Surat, India. So how can we be completely sure that only if we pursue our spiritual desires, our divine aspirations, will our life become fulfilled and successful? There is a very nice quotation from Srila Prabhupada, which is one of my very favorite quotations that has really convinced me that in the end spiritual desires are to be pursued, because material desires always end in frustration. Prabhupada wrote this very early when he was still in Vrindavan. It's in the first canto and first part of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. There he wrote, we have to understand the need of the spirit soul. That we first need to understand, what is it that I truly need? And he answers this question. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere
of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved only when he meets the complete spirit, the supreme personality of Godhead. I want to encourage you to look this part up. It's in the first canto, second chapter, and eighth verse, 1-8. There in the purport you will find this very nice description of what is the actual need. Now, this may be theory for you. Okay, I'm hearing that the need of the spirit soul is to experience complete freedom from the miseries, and that is only possible if I meet Krishna. Then after having heard this, you must take the principle of this information that only together with Krishna I'm happy, and apply it in a way that is possible for you. What could be for us as conditioned soul a way to experience the fulfillment of our need in association with Krishna? Well, we could serve Krishna. We could chant his holy name, or we can have sangha with devotees like we do here at this program. And during this time, it should become clear to us that here I'm feeling content and satisfied. Here I feel that I'm coming closer to my true goal in life. Here I feel that my needs are fulfilled. And in this way, you can become more convinced. So I encourage you to read important texts like this, 1, 2, and 8. It's first canto, second chapter, verse 8, in the purport. And you hear from an enlightened soul, from Srila Prabhupada. Then the next thing is, take the important message out, what this text says for you, and apply it. And you will see that it works. You will see by the results, by the fruits, by your own experience that it works. Thank you very much. Let us now turn to Burijang Prabhu.
Can you hear now? Yes, but okay. Now we shall reach deep into the bowl. Krishna is the God of love. So his tests must be loving tests that are meant to increase our devotion. When we hear the word test, or that someone examines and tests us in this world, we may become anxious. Could you elaborate on Krishna's loving motivation to put tests before us so that we are inspired and enlightened? Good question. Because tests, as this questioner has mentioned, bring up naturally fear. When we think of tests and examinations, we think of our school experience, perhaps, and everyone is afraid of tests and no one looks forward to them. But these kind of tests, first of all, they are not that kind of a test, because those tests have a different purpose. Excuse me, could you just move to the side, please? Those tests have a purpose of aligning us higher or lower so we can achieve more and more. And but these type of tests are for our, which is the actual meaning of examinations, they are for self-assessment, mostly for self-assessment. So we can look and see, we can see how we are doing compared to the ideal. We can see, this is combined with introspection, so we can look and see how we are doing in our own life. Are we ready to pass in front of, are we ready to pass on to the next grade, so to speak? We want to be, we want to go to Krishna, we want to serve, but every day, every hour, practically speaking, we can introspectively watch our consciousness and see if, is this really what I want? And what is pushing me in the opposite direction if I'm not doing what I want? What are these other desires? And that will bring humility to take birth in our heart. And when we're humble, we can take shelter of Krishna, we can chant. So that's actually the purpose of examinations, self-assessment. But there is another purpose, and that is more directly the examination that Krishna gave Sanatana Goswami, the Parikshita that he gave Sanatana Goswami. And I would like to defer to, because I will directly answer that question as to what Krishna's purpose was in testing Sanatana Goswami, what Mahaprabhu's purpose was in testing Sanatana Goswami, what his ultimate purpose was. And when the answer to that question will reveal something of the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and something of the heart of Krishna that will not bring us fear, but it will attract us to him and help us pass the examinations in the future.
Jagata, please, Jagatarini.
Hare Krishna. This is a question. It's in the Prem Vaivarta, says the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya are even more ecstatic than that of Lord Krishna. Please kindly explain this. Is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu more perfect and more complete than Krishna? This is from Avadhuta Roy Das. So first of all, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu isn't more complete or perfect than Krishna, because Krishna is Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also Krishna. But there's a speciality to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela that's extremely valuable and important for us. And that is that it's Krishna himself in this difficult age of Kali Yuga, and he comes and he shows an example of how to become a devotee of Krishna. It's like if a teacher says, okay, I'll sit beside you and show you how to do this. So this is the speciality of Krishna's appearance as Lord Chaitanya. But what is Krishna as Lord Chaitanya trying to teach you to do? He's trying to teach you to love him. So when Krishna comes in the form of Lord Chaitanya, which is only at a scheduled time, and he appears in this world during the most difficult irreligious age, then, of course, Krishna in the form of Lord Chaitanya is so dear to us, so wonderfully necessary and essential to us. Otherwise, we have no access as we see the atmosphere become more and more and more godless. We feel the access to Sri Vrindavan Dham becomes more and more narrow, more and more inaccessible. So Krishna comes in this form and says, follow me and I will take you there. So that's ecstatic, but it's still Krishna himself. Hare Krishna.
Very much. Yes. This question, the next question is from Brahma Tirtha Prabhu, who is in Gainesville in Florida. Here's the question. Our minds tend to minimize the amazing circumstance of Mahaprabhu. How can we be certain of his position as Radha and Krishna? That is following very nicely the last question. Perhaps there is some synchronicity working here. This is a very important question. I will confess to all of you and to Brahma Tirtha Prabhu that for me it was and still is not so easy to understand the divine position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First of all, to understand that God is not an it, he's not an absolute truth. That was already difficult. Then I had to understand that God is a he and a she, Radha and Krishna. That was still another very difficult to understand or feel also as true, you know, or better, to be able to relate to this. Now, then to understand that Radha and Krishna have become one in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to relate to that with faith, with worship, with prayer, was yet another difficulty. And I tried the only path which I think will work for a conditioned soul. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a miracle. That Radha and Krishna are one is clearly a divine miracle. So in order to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I felt I needed to go the road of the miracles. That is, I focused on Mahaprabhu's pastimes a little selectively. I focused on the that, for instance, he shows his six-armed form to Nityananda, to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He shows to Ramananda Roy that he is Radha and Krishna by first revealing himself as Radha, then as Krishna, and then together as Radha and Krishna. He showed ecstasies which have not been seen before, for instance, feeling the fire of separation so acutely that he fell down on a stone and imprinted the limbs of his body as permanent marks in the stone, or the imprints of his fingers can be seen at the Garuda pillar before Lord Jagannath in the Jagannath Mandir. Gaurakrishna, my assistant, has visited and has seen, and he was and it is there. It is for everyone to behold. A miracle. How can a hand become so hot that it melts stone?
It's not an ordinary hand which can do this. So by going through miracles like this and others, I began to understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is definitely more than human. He's not a human being like you and me. Then, after I had taken, when I have difficulties even now with my faith, I always remind myself of these documented and eyewitnessed proofs of his divinity. But more than that, I feel to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we need to take shelter in his gift. And here I don't really mean the chanting of the holy name, although that is a gift. What is in my mind here is, he taught us a certain type of bhakti, which is most favorable for a conditioned soul to develop his relationship to Krishna. And that is the feelings of separations, where you feel, I'm separated from you, my Lord. I'm here and I'm covered with a material mind and material desires and material senses and a material intellect which cannot understand spiritual phenomena very nicely. My dear Lord, still I have this impossible desire to become your devoted associate and serve you. Please, somehow show your quality of unconditional mercy to me. And in this, see, the bhakti subjects ultimately cannot be understood with the mind. We can find intellectual bridges or understandable bridges, like going through his miracles, for instance. But really, bhakti is felt in the purified heart as a purified emotion of devotion and surrender and seeing the Lord as one's guardian and maintainer and so on. So that can only happen through purification of the heart. And again, to purify the heart can be best done if we take Mahaprabhu's gift to chant the holy name in a very particular mindset. Don't forget the mindset. It's not a casual mindset. It's not a, oh yes, I have to somehow chant. When I was young and gullible, I made this promise of 16 rounds. No, it's a mindset of longing. And then you will feel your heart is purified, and at that time you will feel great, great gratitude to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and a deep connection, a loving connection where he reveals himself more and more and more. Thank you for this wonderful question. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Such deep and personal questions answered in a deep and personal way. Thank you. Which one is jumping out? Two. We'll put that one aside for later. Especially in difficult times, faith and surrender to Krishna is tested very much. I become confused and disturbed. What should I do? In the case of Sanatana Goswami, the Lord personally gave assurance. This is one kind-hearted devotee in Delhi is asking this question. So, yes, our faith and surrender naturally will be tested in difficult times. And of course, we know that the ultimate test, I don't know the Bengali proverb in this regard in Bengali, but I heard Prabhupada say it recently in a recording that one's bhajan, one's puja is tested at the time of death. Now, when is what type of a time will be as confusing and as difficult and as painful as that? We will be tested very greatly at that time. So the fact that you're conscious, introspective enough to know that you get confused and disturbed in difficult times is very important and very, very commendable. And then the question next transforms into the question that you asked, what should I do? So that question means, how do I increase my faith? How do I increase my surrender? How do I increase my devotion to the degree that that I don't become confused? Rather, I hold more tightly onto the lotus feet of my beloved Lord at that time. And in the fourth chapter of Antilila, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly answers that question by telling Sanatana Goswami that the answer to the problem that you're facing of not being able to be with your beloved Lord, which in that case was him and Lord Jagannath, the answer is not suicide. The answer to your question is not acting in a way that's predicated by the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. The answer that Mahaprabhu gave to Sanatana Goswami how to resolve the dilemma was to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's holy names free from offenses. And look what what position Mahaprabhu placed Sanatana Goswami in good association, where he could hear and speak about Krishna. So in the case of Sanatana Goswami, the Lord personally gave assurance. But in the case of this very kind of devotee, who is very powerful by virtue of his name, there is also an assurance that if you, at one time even, I've learned this verse so many times, but I still have a hard time remembering it. that it's from the Ramayana, where Lord Ramachandra says in regard to Bibhishan, he said, when everyone wanted to reject Bibhishan, Lord Ramachandra said, no, I give you my promise. This is my vow that if a person one time takes shelter of me, tavas me, that I am yours. If one says that one time sincerely to Krishna, standing in front of Guru, standing in front of Vaishnavas, standing in front of our beloved Radhaparta Sarti, Gornatai, Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, who are there to remind us of this, standing in front of Prabhupada, if one person, any soul, one time says that it is the promise of the Lord to protect him and free him from fear. And even if we doubt that, if we do our part and sincerely give ourselves to Krishna, we will see that although we forget him, he never forgets us. And he will tap us on the shoulder sometimes and let us know that he is with us at a time we expect it the least, just to let us know that he is always with us. Hare Krishna. Another sincere question. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Mataji, you have such a natural, spontaneous kind of attraction to Lord's pastimes in Vraja. How do we actually take shelter of Vrindavan Dham so that it reveals itself to us? This is from Alicia in London. I was thinking the other morning how when I first came to India, it was in 1974. And it was a difficult period in my life. It wasn't coming with great excitement. In fact, in some ways, I was reluctant to come. But Srila Prabhupada had requested us to come to the Mayapur festival that year. So when I arrived in Kolkata, I experienced culture shock of being in India for the first time. And the Mayapur project was not very well developed, and more culture shock took place there. So I felt quite vulnerable, and we had a journey on a train from Kolkata to Mathura. And I thought, let me try and at least prepare myself for the next part of the journey. And so I had a Krishna book with me, and I just kind of curled up in a corner in the carriage and just kept reading. Not because I was excited and jubilant, but because I didn't want to miss out on another opportunity. And that reading about Krishna meant that when we stopped in Mathura and all got off the train, I remember just looking around and thinking, oh my gosh, this is the place where all those leelas or stories of Krishna took place. And by some kindness of Vrindavan herself, I came off the train into the bus and to the Fogal Ashram, and everything about Vrindavan appeared magical. Now, I don't think that would have happened if I hadn't prepared myself, because there was so much turbulence, so much inner turbulence in my life at that time, that I would have just been there musing on me. You know, how am I going to cope when I go home? How am I going to deal with this problem? How am I going to go on with my spiritual life? But this key factor, this shift, came about, I'm sure, very much by holding on to what Srila Prabhupada gave us to hold very tightly to, which was Krishna and Vrindavan. And that time, I was feeling this hopefulness. And as we were about to leave, to return to Hong Kong, which was a horrible place, and Srila Prabhupada had insisted that we should return there to our duties and services there, which I was very reluctant to do. Just before we left, we had his moment of association, and he looked at us and said, "How do you like Vrindavan?" And he had a sparkle in his eye. It was like proud and pleased, and like somebody who really wanted you to have had an amazing time. And I responded without even thinking, without any kind of etiquette. I just said, "Oh, it's amazing, Prabhupada." And he responded in the same way, spontaneously, and he said, "Then you should come and live here." And then, without the appropriate reverence, I started laughing. And I said, "But you just sent us back to Hong Kong," which was like, to me, was like going to hell. And he looked at me again with this, you know, can't be defeated look. And he said, then you should come here for some months every year. And in my case, I got back to Hong Kong, but I thought this was just a charming exchange. I thought they were sweet, affectionate words. I was too immature to realize that they weren't just immature words. They were a very important instruction that you should come and live here for some time every year, because the experience of Vrindavan, it lifts you up like a wave, it takes you up, and then boom, you're back into your life as you know it. And without that thought that there's another wave coming, sometimes it feels like you're drowning in the ocean. So that would be my personal story. And also I think there are hints in there of what you could look at to see how you too could enhance your relationship with Sri Vrindavan Dham. Thank you for your question. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Wonderful to hear this personal story. Was Burijan Prabhu with you at that time?
What's that?
Was Burijan Prabhu with you also at that time in the room? Wow.
And he replied.
No, don't say what I replied.
Ask him what he replied.
What did you reply?
I'll tell you later. I can't remember.
Okay.
Oh, you are between us now.
Good. Here's another question. It is from Ritu in Madhya Pradesh, India. I also want to sing like a bird, to submit myself into the service of Krishna and flow like the river. But when someone tries to interrupt in between or stop me doing so, should I take it as a test or as Krishna wants me to do some other services? Please guide me how to effectively use Udipans in a disappointing or disturbing circumstance. First of all, you must know that there will always be some disappointment of desires in this material world. The world is made like this to really show you, especially when you are a sincere spiritualist like you seem to be, that we cannot be happy by investing in the material desires which are still there maybe. The world will always show us this does not work. My dear Ritu, I do not know how old you are, nor do I know if you are a man or a woman, but let me tell from my experience of a little elderly person now. I'm approaching 70 years of age, so I've been for 50 years or something on the spiritual path under Srila Prabhupada's shelter. So I have seen in the life of a servant that there are always obstacles. There are always disappointments. There are always discouragements offered by others. But good spiritual practice will empower you to not act upon these disturbances and discouragement and obstacles. You will somehow find a way to
pursue them. Now, if you have a question where you are not sure that these obstacles are maybe sent directly by Krishna to hint to me that I should not move on this path, but I should take another route, I should maybe change my service or my location. If you have this feeling that maybe Krishna wants to show me something, then I would like to give you the following advice. When Krishna wants to show you something, he will show it to you again and again and again until it is clear in your heart. Okay, I get it. This is Krishna's way. He understands that we are conditioned souls and we have difficulties in seeing his hand working. So he will repeatedly, again and again, make his intentions clear. But if an obstacle shows up for the first time, or if it is clearly something which is offered because someone may not like you or has his problems with you, then it's good to stay on the path and be there. I would like to end my question by repeating something which Burijan Prabhu said. You remember he told us, he wanted to tell upon us mature reactions to obstacles. He wanted to talk about this, and he gave this example that there were once two identical twins who had a terrible drunkard as their father. So one of them turned into a homeless beggar who was also a drunkard on the streets, and another into a neurosurgeon. So the two twins were interviewed. How did you turn into a drunkard, was the question to the first twin. And the twin answered, how could I become anything else with a father like this, who is a drunkard? Then the same question was asked to the second twin, who became a neurosurgeon, who saved people's life. Also he was asked, how did you become a neurosurgeon? And he gave this answer, how could I have become anything else with a father like this? So one person took his circumstance of being born from a drunkard as an excuse to give in to his lower nature and become a drunkard also. And the other took this same circumstance as an inspiration to make something wonderful out of his life. And I believe this is the road a devotee must take when there are obstacles or turning up in his life. He turns these obstacles into inspirations and says, oh, now I understand what is material life. Now I understand what I'm dealing with as I'm in the material world. Let me take more shelter with Krishna, at Krishna. We have a famous intellectual in the German culture who wrote many books. I think you all must have heard about him. His name was Goethe. That's how you tell his name in the German language. In the English language, yes, Goethe. You would say Goethe. You would
but the right pronunciation is Goethe. So he said, I can also turn the stones which are placed into my path into something beautiful and build a house with them. Even from the obstacles, I can build a beautiful house. Hare Krishna.
Why was Sanatana Goswami feeling?
Why was Sanatana Goswami feeling that he had done an offense? Whether it was it because the pus oozing from his body was getting smeared on the Lord's transcendental body, or because he was opposing the Lord's desire to embrace him? Whether something done without any desire to do so, can that still be considered an offense? This is a very interesting question. So the simple answer is that really there wasn't any offense on Sanatana Goswami's part, factually speaking, because one way to look at the word aparad, which we are naturally so afraid of, one way to look at the word offense is that you're acting in such a way that you're insulting the Lord. It's a simple way to look at aparad that makes it clearer and easily understandable, that it's an insult to him. So giving an example, if you're standing in front of the deities and your phone rings and you start talking to someone else while you're standing in front of the deities, and if you consider the deities, it's being like you're in front of the king. You're in front of the supreme king, the supreme lord of the universe. Now, this is going to be an offense because you're carrying on a separate conversation. You have the honor in being in front of the Lord, and yet you're insulting him by not paying attention to him. And it's very dangerous to do that in front of the king because he can sever your head from your body very easily. So that's an example of an aparad. Now, if your phone rings and you immediately understand where you are and you immediately turn it off, no, that's not an offense, even though there may be some little bit of disturbance caused by to the Lord, or maybe you understood I should have turned it off before I come into the temple, into the Lord's presence. So it's like that. So the part of your question where you ask, can something be done without any desire to cause an offense, any desire to insult, is that still an offense? When people, when the devotees first came to India, to Vrindavan, all those photographs you see of at the beginning of the retreat of those devotees, Western devotees wandering around with Prabhupada, but they weren't given a very warm reception by the local Vrindavan residents because they had a very, even though they were dressed properly as devotees, they were Westerners and they came from a different culture and they didn't understand the subtleties of Vaishnava etiquette and Vaishnava behavior, Vaishnava sadachar. So they weren't treated very well at all. And Prabhupada, if you listen to his Nectar of Devotion lectures spoken at Radha Damodar, he told the people of Vrindavan, please treat them well. They may be a little bit inexpert. They may, but don't drive them away. Don't treat them badly. See them as Vaishnavas. Don't see them as Westerners or Western Vaishnavas. No, that is offense, actually. So the answer to the question whether something done without any consciousness of it, what to speak of desire, can that be considered an offense? And the answer is not really. It's like a child. And that's what Mahaprabhu told Sanatana and Haridas. You are like my children. I don't consider any offense by anything that you do, because naturally, out of affection, it's not possible for you to offend me, practically speaking, for your affection for me and my affection for you. So then the question is whether Sanatana Goswami's body touching the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was that actually an offense, or was it something that Sanatana Goswami was experiencing as offense, but it wasn't actually an offense? And we can understand and not imitate by understanding the mood. If we walk in before the deities in a unclean state, in a horrible state, and what to speak of touching the deities, we will feel that this is improper. But in the case of Sanatana Goswami, it was clearly Mahaprabhu's arrangement. And there was no offense, actually. There was no offense at all, because this was the arrangement of Krishna to teach us through teaching Sanatana Goswami. I once did something that was with Prabhupada that I really had to internally struggle about before I did it. And Prabhupada, this was in perhaps 1975 in Melbourne, and he was getting on, all the devotees were in the airport, and Prabhupada was about to depart Melbourne again on a plane. And Prabhupada stood up to go, and his hat was on in a very funny way. It was tilted to the side. And I thought, how could I let Prabhupada, people might laugh and think that it's funny and not take him, people might insult him in that way or have an insulting attitude. After all, there he is, Prabhupada, and he's walking on the plane. So on one hand, I wanted to straighten the hat. And then on the other hand, that how could I do that to Prabhupada? And then on the other hand, three-handed form, on the other hand, all the devotees were there. And how am I going to, if I was bold enough to do this, how could I do it really in front of all the devotees? So somehow or another, Prabhupada started walking, and I just did it. I walked out right in front of Prabhupada. There was just, everyone has to walk behind Prabhupada, but I just walked right out in front of Prabhupada, and I stood in front of him, and I straightened his hat. And he just let me do it, and I just moved back. I didn't make anything of it. He didn't change the expression on his face. He just let me do my service, what I thought was my service, and he accepted it. So some devotees may think this was improper and offensive or whatever, but I knew that Prabhupada just accepted my offering. And I'm not sure if this is exactly relevant to the question about offenses, but it was such an amazing experience. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, can you hear? You mentioned in the presentation that Vrindavan is made for our enjoyment. I wanted to understand this statement. Could you elaborate on that? Also, you mentioned that somehow or another, we become attached to Krishna. Is it all right that we are attracted to form, to one form other than another? I think that's the question. To form than the other? I feel guilty. Any input? Your servant, Madhumati. So, Madhumati, thank you for the question. So the first point, when I was preparing that presentation, I got to the point where I was going to write that Vrindavan is meant for our enjoyment. And there was a large part of me has regularly told people in a different context that Vrindavan is not meant for our enjoyment. It's meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So when I took the pen to write that Vrindavan is meant made for our enjoyment, I had to shift from the hour. In other words, it's not me, this human being who comes to Vrindavan and spends all their time buying clothes in Lloyd Bazaar. That's not who we are. But we are actually these infinitesimal parts of Krishna. We're his transcendental entourage gone wrong, you could say, gone in the wrong direction. It's like if you're with a group of people and you're taking them on some kind of a tour, and you're walking down the road and you suddenly realize that five of them are missing. And you have to walk all the way back and see that, oh, there's a junction here. There's two roads go like this. And then you've got to go find them because they've gone missing. So the mood that Srila Sanatana Goswami gives in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Krishna's anticipation or his welcome when somebody comes back to him, it's overwhelming. It will make you cry and cry. Because here we are in the world trying to make ourselves happy and secure and satisfied and always troubled by some little something, like you're saying, feeling guilty, feeling worried, or worse. And then there's somebody waiting for us. So in that context, I made the statement that Vrindavan is meant for our enjoyment. It's where we belong. It's where we fit right in. Once that misdirection has been corrected, if we come back on track and keep going, that's our destination. So is there something wrong with being more attached to one form of Krishna than another? No, not really. We hear about Madhavendra Puri, and he was very attached to the Gopal deity who he found, who he unearthed at Jatipur or near Govindakund. And he went on behalf of Gopal to Puri to get the chandan to cool his body. But when he was returning, he was at Remuna. He had a dream that Gopal said, give this chandan to Gopinath, and in that way, I will feel cool here in Vrindavan. And although his attachment was to Gopal, he gave the chandan to Gopinath and he stayed there as long as it took for that chandan to be ground and made into a paste and offered to Gopinath every day. So he stayed there on behalf of Gopal to give the chandan to Gopinath. So we may have our own personal deities or a temple place whose deities we really have depended upon and prayed to and tried to serve and render our heart to. And then we go to another place and everybody there is enthusiastic about those deities. So it takes a little bit of thoughtfulness and prayerfulness to see our deities in that other deity, or to keep them separate and respect and love both of them. But ultimately, they're both Krishna. There may be some differentiations, but there we're speaking about something more technical or more advanced. The general principle is like that. Thank you, Madhamati. Hare Krishna.
Sorry, I just needed to solve something. Okay, here is a question. By the way, it's very sincere questions. It's really an honor to have such an audience of such sincere devotees. And it is very nice to also listen to the answers. Here's a question from Rohini Nandandas from the USA. Being a conditioned soul influenced by the material modes, am I being envious of the gopis when I think that they are being selfish for not wanting Akrura to take Krishna from them? Is it proper for a Vaishnav etiquette to aspire to have Krishna only for himself? I'm also thinking I should appreciate and learn from the gopis on how I should pray for purification so that I can also learn to love Krishna like them. Please enlighten this confused soul. Well, when the gopis want Krishna exclusively, it is a different sentiment than, let us say, a greedy businessman who wants all the hills and all the lands for himself. I've heard of such a businessman who has bought huge parts of the landscape in India for himself, for mining purposes. He wants to mine the hills, and he has made virtually thousands of people who lived there homeless and without any means of income, because these people used to live from the land. But he purchased the land and drove them all the way to have it all for himself, although he already has millions and millions of dollars on his bank account, billions maybe. So when the gopis want Krishna, is it like that they want to have him all for himself and deplete others of Krishna's presence? No, it's not like this. First of all, you must know that Krishna has an individual relationship to all souls, even to the little ants, the souls who are in the ant's body. And he is perfectly able to reciprocate all these unlimited relationships. He's called Akila Rasamrita Sindhu, the personality who can have rasa or relationships and the nectar of that rasa with Akila, with unlimited souls. So by wanting Krishna for yourself, you're not pulling Krishna away from all the other living beings. The second point to consider is when the gopis express their yearning for Krishna, it is like a fish who may want the ocean so much, because he knows without swimming in the ocean, my existence is terminated. I cannot survive. I have to die. Or like you and me, who when we are choking and we cannot breathe,
after some time, we really want to breathe, not to take air away from others. That's not our purpose. We can't imagine to survive without a breath. And yes, physically it is not possible. So the gopis express the spiritual need of the soul in the most perfect way. And they are glorious for all Vaishnavas, because in order to reach Krishna, they overcame all the obstacles which were there on their way, like local tradition. It was unthinkable that an unmarried girl would go in the night, leave her home in the night to meet a romantic lover in the forest. This meant I do not know the English word so well. It means something like the verb to ostracize. They would be ostracized from society, thrown out. All the rights which they would have would be taken from them. They would be all on their own, and nobody would have ever like to see their faces again. They risked this because their love for Krishna was so great. The strength of their love was breaking the strongest bonds a human being in that time could have. The bonds to tradition, to community, to local community, and so on. And in this way, they are the examples of Krishna Bhakti, because in order to develop love for Krishna, we will also have to overcome all the obstacles on our path. Thank you very much for this wonderful question. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. My question is, Srila Sanatana Goswami is a pure devotee and highly elevated in spiritual knowledge. Then why did he contemplate giving up his body, knowing that it is not his property, but Krishna's? What is his thought process, and how do we see bhakti here? Thank you so much. From someone who is deathless, who will live forever, but not in Chicago. Well, his thought processes were spoken by himself, practically speaking. But that doesn't answer your full question. His thought processes were that I'm going to see the Lord. First of all, his body is covered by these itching sores that are weeping, and he's scratching, and it's making it worse, and blood is coming. And he's thinking that when I go to Jagannath Puri, I won't be able to see the Lord all the time because he's living near the temple. And if I won't be able to see the Lord all the time, and I won't be able to see Lord Jagannath because I can't enter the temple, not because of my wounds, my sores, but I can't enter the temple because I have committed, because of my bad association, I have worked for the government that has destroyed so many temples and given so much trouble to the Hindus. I'm an outcast from my own caste. So I'm no longer in the Varnashrama system, which will allow me to go into the temple. So I won't be able to see Lord Jagannath except when he comes out for Rath Yatra. So I can't see Mahaprabhu. I can't see Lord Jagannath. And not only that, what I won't be doing will be so intolerable, I will be committing offenses. What happens if I touch the pujaris just by accident in the crowded roads of Jagannath Puri as they're going to the temple? I'll be interfering with their service. I'll be interfering with their service, and what an offense I'll have committed to them. So he's thinking that I have no service, I have no purpose in existence, I can't even see Lord Jagannath, and therefore what is the purpose of my life? Now that feeling that I have no purpose in my life if I can't serve Krishna, be with Krishna, is perfect and pure. That feeling Mahaprabhu did not interfere with, and that feeling was one of virahabhav, or separation, that my existence is meant for Krishna's pleasure, for Krishna's service. Mahaprabhu did not say anything bad about that, rather than that was his essential teaching, to serve Krishna, thinking myself very distant from Krishna, but not being able to tolerate being distant from Krishna. So therefore I serve in separation. So that was his thinking, that I have no purpose in my existence. Why I'm not attached to this horrible body that's horrible anyway and sick and only going to cause trouble to others. I'm not attached to it. Let me give it up and do something better. So that was his thought processes, or achieve a higher goal. But the question is, that you are asking more essentially, how could he do that knowing that his body actually wasn't his body, but it wasn't directly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's body, but it was his Mahaprabhu's body in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this type of a thought was placed there by Krishna so that this Leela can go on, because it is a Leela, it is a divine enactment for two specific purposes. Not this specific Leela is just for two purposes. And Mahaprabhu's Leelas, as later on will be said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that so many purposes flow from them, like so many tributaries flow from the Ganga. But the two purposes in general of Leela, Mahaprabhu's Leela, but also Krishna Leela, but especially Mahaprabhu's Leela, is that he teaches through them. That's one purpose. He teaches through them. And in this particular case, he's not going to teach through his words, but he's going to teach through the exemplary character of Sanatana Goswami. And who is he going to teach? He's going to teach us. So that's one purpose. And the other purpose is that it's instructive in so many ways, in tens of ways, in hundreds of ways. It's instructive for us on how we should go through our life, modeling our life as best we can on the exemplary character of Sri Sanatana Goswami. It's Mahaprabhu speaking through, acting through Sanatana Goswami, just as he spoke through Haridas Thakur, just as he spoke through Sri Ramananda Roy. But the second purpose is in Mahaprabhu's dealings, is that he's always relishing his relationships. And Krishna is Leela Purushottam, because he's always relishing relationships, rasa. So Mahaprabhu here, look at his dealings, how subtle and intricate they are between Thakur Haridas and him, and Sanatana Goswami and him. And he's relishing that so much, the sweetness of the dealings and the ability to express love and exchange love and receive love. And this is what everyone is always looking for. And perhaps if we would look more to the spiritual, if we would cast our glance to the spiritual side and the spiritual realm, then we will become closer to realizing our heart's desire of exchange of love. And the second point again was meaning in our life. So the fact that he was thinking, he wasn't considering it his property, this is Leela, by in relationship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna.
So, Hare Krishna, Jagatarini, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Jagatarini?
Yes, now I can
hear you. Good, 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 good. I've just gotten information by the technical crew pointing out that we have to finish. I would say, if you please take a... No, we don't want to be rude. Just take a question and just answer it concisely, and then we will finish after you. That would be... We want to hear from you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you so much to help us to meditate on Vrindavan. Please guide me how I can meditate more and more about Vrindavan. Anarpita Kripamoyi Das. So, how to meditate more and more on Vrindavan? Well, you have to come in touch with Vrindavan in some form, whether it becomes through bhajans about Vrindavan, whether it becomes through Krishna study of Krishna book about Vrindavan, whether it becomes through listening to the subject matter of Vrindavan through devotees, which is online or somehow. You need to become like very curious. How can I get a little more Vrindavan into my life? And just before we finish, the other thing is, you see, we carry Krishna with us. And so when we realize that we're thinking away up here, how can I have this? How can I have this? But he's aware of that. Now, if I'm thinking, and he's listening, that's not a conversation. That's a monologue. I'm this, I'm that, what can I do? But if we understand this, that Krishna is, I'm seated in everyone's heart, if we recognize that, then we ask that question also through our prayer and thoughtfulness to him as well. It's possible. You should try it. And I guarantee you that you'll get a result from it. It's the difference between a dialogue, an exchange, and a monologue, which is just us listening to our thoughts. So make an active attempt, and I think you will see good results. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj.